Welcome to Today on Broadway for Monday, May 8th, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
James, this week on Broadway, you had an interesting discussion, something that usually do a little later in the Tony Awards calendar, but you did it a little early because the wonderful and great Peter Felicia had some things on his mind that he wanted to discuss.
Yeah, the entire show for this week on Broadway this week is about some of the Tony nominations. We didn't cover all of them, and we'll probably get back to the rest of them later in the next couple of weeks. But Peter Felicia and Jan Simpson was on. Peter Felicia and Jan Simpson were on, and we talked about the Tony nominations. And aside from some of the Tony nominations, we talked about what was missing from some of the categories insofar as performances, shows, and things like that. And it made me really think about and remember, oh, yeah, it was a really good reason to bring these people up, and that in the season that we have just lived through, some really wonderful things have happened.
Yeah, and I mentioned before we went on air, I mean, it's a catch-22, because when you have a bunch of things that you're disappointed that they didn't get nominated, you feel bad for those people that were involved, whether they were individual nominations or production nominations. You feel bad that they didn't get the recognition. But then you also think, wow, if there are these many people that I think could have legitimately been nominated, it must have been a really good season.
It really was an amazing season, and yay us. So...
or you, and more you than me. I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, I didn't really have anything to do with the season other than sit in an audience and watch it, which was great for me. But these people that have, you know, put art on stage and time, effort, money, and sweat into stuff, it's really an amazing thing. Absolutely. First up in the news, the reviews are in for National Theatre's Angels in America.
Yeah, last week, the National Theatre's star-studded production of Tony Kushner's Angels in America opened in London. The production stars Andrew Garfield, Denise Gough, Russell Tovey, Nathan Lane, and more, and is directed by Tony and Olivier winner Marion Elliott. Ben Brantley of the New York Times ventured across the pond, as he is wont to do this time of year, and wrote, quote, "This Angels is a rich, imperfect production of a rich, imperfect play." He continues, saying that Garfield is splendid as Prior Walter, writing, quote, "Mr. Garfield has the florid mannerisms of a vintage drag queen down pat, but he wields them as part of an intricate defense system born of both fear and defiance. This Prior is palpably as scared as hell and as mad as hell, too." Equally good is Russell Tovey in the less showy role of Joe Pitt. He later writes, "And in the sour plum role of Roy Cohn, Mr. Lane is savory indeed. The classic clown's anger has always percolated beneath the surface of Mr. Lane's comic performances. Here, he gives rage full rein, and he incinerates. This Roy is a larger-than-life monster and, ultimately, a shrunken specimen of humanity." Brantley doesn't necessarily love all of the performers in the show, but he writes, "Even if the cast members aren't quite on the same playing field, they all guarantee that Mr. Kushner's words register and echo." James, if you read this review from Ben Brantley, it's a little more political than he normally tends to get. Obviously, there's reasons for that because of the subject matter of the play. Also, the fact that Nathan Lane's character Roy Cohn is based on a real person who just so happened to be the former, maybe even current, but at least former lawyer of our current president. So a little political intrigue going on there in Mr. Brantley's column. Going to some reviews that originated in the UK, Michael Billington of The Guardian wrote, "What is one left with at the end of 8 hours? Some memorable images, thanks to Ian McNeil's design, some astonishing performances from a very good cast, but the prime impression is of Kushner's conviction that, although we live in dark times where both God and Marx are dead, there is always hope in the instinct for survival and the tenacity of the human spirit." Henry Hitchings of the Evening Standard Also, wrote director Marianne Elliott, orchestrates proceedings with immense rigor. For an idea of her technical complexity, consider the fact that when Pryor receives a visit from an angel, her massive wings need to be operated by no fewer than 6 people. True, there are times when the production's intensity drops off, but this is a courageous revival underpinned by piercingly authentic performances. Now, James, long before this production began, we were already hearing rumors of a potential Broadway transfer. Do you think Broadway has room for 2 two-part productions next season, both with some sort of DNA registering from the UK?
Do you have your spreadsheet of spaces? What do you think?
Let me pull it up here. Let me pull up my handy-dandy Broadway House's spreadsheet. Opening Google Docs. Okay. Right now, it looks like we have the Booth Theater open. We have the Broadway Theater open, assuming that Miss Saigon continues on its path of being a limited run.
Well, I think that the Broadway Theater is too big for Angels in America.
Is it? Even this production with Marianne Elliott, who, you know, she's most known for directing things like War Horse and Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. But let me run through these. Let me some of these other ones. We've got there's a bunch, actually. You've got Broadway. Okay, Circle in the Square, the Barrymore after 6 Degrees of Separation closes. You've got the Golden after A Doll's House. There's some other things that very well might close. What?
I just thought, bam.
Well, it could.
Brooklyn Academy of Music has been doing some they've always done stuff there, but it's become more present that big superstar shows that you would seemingly think was a Broadway show could happen there.
Or even St. Anne's.
Yeah. Well, yeah. St. Anne's might not be big enough, but BAM is. Yeah, I mean, St. Anne's certainly would be it's a much smaller house, and the ticket prices would be astronomical. But I think you could probably do it at BAM for some sort of, 12-week limited run type of thing if they couldn't find the right Broadway house for it. There's so many things circling.
Yeah, we've got 5 shows that have already announced Broadway intentions for this season but do not yet have theaters. We've got M. Butterfly, which I think that announcement might be coming very soon. The Minutes, Once on This Island, Carousel, and An Enemy of the People. So when some of these things that may close after the Tonys or maybe even after Labor Day start to fall, I think things will start to fall into place. But as of now, it looks like we've got 4 houses that are definitely going to be open. You've got to take the Palace out because I think the Palace will be starting to undergo renovations once Sunset closes. But other than that, there's a lot of yellow on my spreadsheet, which means potentially available, not officially, but potentially. So we'll see what happens.
I'm looking here. Last time Angels was playing in New York, it was off Broadway. Was it 2010, 2011? I thought it was.
Yeah, with Zachary Quinto.
Yeah, it was more recent than that. But certainly, it sounds. I mean, I would just go see Nathan Lane as Roy Cohn. Just that alone, mm-hmm. And I love Angels in America, both parts, and so that would be very interesting. All right, next up, critics weigh in on John Doyle's Pacific Overtures.
Yeah, last week, the Classic Stage Company opened a new production of Stephen Sondheim and John Wideman's Pacific Overtures. Directed by John Doyle in his celebrated minimalist style, the show stars George Takei, Anne Harada, Carl Joseph Coe, Kelvin Moon Low, and more. The show, which, for a lot of Broadway historians, know it was staged in this huge, grand, kabuki-like, classic musical theater style. But for this, it's been edited down to just 90 minutes, removing whole songs and whole characters, and is performed by just 10 Asian American actors in modern dress with a little to no props or set pieces, save one large, stylized piece that makes up their entire stage. Jesse Green of the New York Times, in what I think is his first review in his new position, he writes, "The sometimes glorious, sometimes lackluster revival that John Doyle has staged in Classic Stage's 200-seat off-Broadway home takes that less-is-more proposition nearly to the point of no return. Unlike Harold Prince's original production at the 1,500-seat Winter Garden, with its jaw-dropping Boris Aronson scenery and costumes by Florence Klotz, Mr. Doyle starts from zero and adds only what he feels he must. He is an essentialist, not a minimalist. Marilyn Stasio of Variety wrote, "Director John Doyle is such a wizard, he could probably stage a show on a postage stamp. The stage at Classic Stage Company is larger than that, as reconfigured for this off-Broadway house. The play space for Stephen Sondheim's Pacific Overtures unfurls like a Japanese scroll, creating a ramp that runs the length of the theater. The stylized performances by a superb Asian-American cast, including George Takei, are ideally suited to this minimalist production of one of the great musicals of our time." Matt Wendman, kind of dealing with some metaphors that I'm not sure I'm 100% comfortable with, wrote, quote, "The new off-Broadway revival of Stephen Sondheim and John Wideman's intricate and unusual 1976 musical Pacific Overtures is like a bonsai tree that has been pruned with hedge clippers instead of scissors, or a barbershop customer who got too close a shave from Sweeney Todd. Linda Weiner of Newsday misses some of those things that have been trimmed," as Wendman mentioned. She wrote, "George Takei is dignified and wary as the reciter, not required to sing much. Some favorite songs are missing. No lion dance because no one plays Perry, and no chrysanthemum tea because there is no Shogun mother. But the gorgeous music still mingles the foreign sounds with wooden flutes with Western vaudeville. Someone in the tree still has poignant wisdom about the unknowability of history. And though realities in Japan and here have changed since 1976, questions about progress have seldom felt as authentic." James, John Doyle is one of our most interesting, if not brilliant, directors. He has a perspective that is very much innate in his directing style. And while he adapts that perspective depending on what it is that he is doing, as he obviously did with The Color Purple last year, I have to wonder if that perspective might eventually wear thin, as now that he is the artistic director of the Classic Stage Company, if he doesn't do any shows in a traditional classic way.
I think that that was the buzz and somewhat concern when it was announced that he was taking over as the Classic Stage Company's artistic director. And I think only time is going to tell to bear this out. I'm going to try to get down to see Pacific Overtures. I haven't scheduled it yet, but I'll let you know what I think. I've been a big fan of some of John Doyle's work, and I've been very critical of some of John Doyle's work. So we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, that seems to be par for the course for most people. Love some of his stuff, not so much the others.
Yeah. So show and casting news. We've talked about this for months and months and months. Telly Lil Young finally gets Aladdin start date.
Yeah, James, it actually feels like we've been talking about it for 1001 nights.
Oh.
But on Friday, it became official that Telly Lil Young will take over as Broadway's Aladdin, beginning on the performance after the Tony Awards, Tuesday, June 13th. Jacob Dickey has been playing the role since original Aladdin Adam Jacobs left the production earlier this year to lead the national tour. But James, what's interesting about this is that even though Jacobs left, gosh, I want to say in February even, the press release for Lil Young starting said that he is succeeding Adam Jacobs. So I don't know if they're just considering Jacob Dickey temporary. I mean, he's listed as Aladdin on the show's website. So it's interesting how they're kind of playing semantics with these casting announcements. In other show and casting news, though, as we speculated when the cast was originally announced, the Public Theater has found a most fitting queen for their Shakespeare in the Park production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. On Friday, it was announced that the great and the good Felicia Rashad will be playing the fairy queen Titania from May 23rd through June 18th at the Delacorte Theater. Still no word as to who will be her Oberon, but with previews beginning in 2 weeks from tomorrow, I would imagine that we will find out soon. Rashad is joining a cast that includes Annalee Ashford as Helena, Danny Burstein as Nick Bottom, not to be confused with the Nick Bottom in Something Rotten. Different people, same name. And Christine Nielsen is playing Puck. If I were you folks, I would start lining up to see this one now.
That is going to be so much fun. All right. So next up, theatrical film news.
Yeah, on Friday, it was announced that the film version of Michael John Lacuse's musical Hello Again will have its world premiere at the Inside Out Toronto LGBT Film Festival next month. Tickets are on sale now for the film starring Audra McDonald, Martha Plimpton, T.R. Knight, Rumor Willis, Jenna Ushkowitz, Nolan Gerard Funk, and more. The festival begins on May 25th and runs through June 4th, with Hello Again being the final film to screen, kind of in that prestige spot on June 4th. You can get more information and purchase tickets at insideout.ca. Also in theatrical film news, this one less theatrical, but I still think it qualifies because we've talked about it a lot. Last week, we got more information about the upcoming remake of A Star Is Born. Not only did star and director Bradley Cooper confirm that he will be singing in the film, but we also learned that Mercurial comedy legend Dave Chappelle will co-star alongside Cooper and Lady Gaga. In this fourth version of A Star Is Born, according to Variety, Cooper plays Jackson Maine, a country music star on the brink of decline when he discovers a talented unknown named Allie, that's Lady Gaga. As the two begin a passionate love affair, he coaxes her into the spotlight, catapulting her to stardom. But as her career quickly eclipses his own, he finds it increasingly hard to handle his fading glory. Chappelle will play Cooper's oldest friend who used to perform with him at blues clubs. This was already interesting to me, but once you throw in Dave Chappelle to anything, I immediately am more interested.
So in reading the synopsis here that you've provided, the Cooper plays Jackson Maine, a country music star on the brink of decline when he discovers a talented and unknown Allie is to begin a passionate love affair. He coaxes her into the spotlight, catapulting her to stardom. It makes it seem as though Morning Joe's Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough could be a musical, right?
I'm just not.
I just... That's probably the most shocking thing that's ever been announced ever. All right.
Is it?
No, it's not. So Andy Carl visits the Hollywood Reporter's Awards Chatter podcast.
Yeah, over the weekend, I listened to the Hollywood Reporter's Scott Feinberg's latest episode of his Award Chatter podcast, in which he interviewed Groundhog Day star Andy Carl. If you haven't listened to these podcasts before, Feinberg does his best James Lipton impression and goes through artists' entire career working up to the project for which they are currently nominated, whether it's the Tonys, as they are in this case, Oscars, Emmys, whatever. And it's the Hollywood Reporter, so he generally gets, like, only A-list guests. He doesn't do the introspective technique questions that Lipton does on Inside the Actor's Studio, but he does get pretty compelling stuff, talking with Andy Carl from his days working in dinner theaters in Baltimore all the way up to talking about his injury. It was really interesting, James, because it hasn't really been that long. You know, in terms of like Broadway time, it feels like Andy Carl's injury happened like, I don't know, 3 years ago, but it's really been like 3 weeks, and it's still really emotional for him to talking about the fact that he felt in that moment that he could have lost everything that he'd worked for in this show and what he thought was a really special show. So it's really touching to kind of hear that. They talk a lot about Orfei, because how can you not talk a lot about Orfei? But it's really good. And I would imagine that with Tony nominations just recently announced, he will be getting more theatrical content on the Awards Chatter podcast. Last year, he interviewed Danai Gurira for Eclipse, Joe Mantello for The Humans, Leslie Odom Jr. for Hamilton, Jeff Daniels for Blackbird. And he also had his traditional actor and actress roundtable discussions that he put on the podcast, but also are housed on the Hollywood Reporter's website, which are always cool, where he gets seven actors to talk about their nomination and their parts and their careers, and then seven actresses as well. So those are always really fun. So if you don't subscribe to that, definitely check that out. They're always great, about hour-ish long conversations.
That sounds really exciting. I'm going to check that out. I hope everybody does too. All right, why don't you get us out of here?
All right, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt, and subscribe to Sound Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for starting off your week with us, and we'll be back and talk with you tomorrow. ¶¶